Hey, what's going on there, Warrior? Jeff here from warriorlife.com, and welcome to podcast episode number 469. So I got something a little bit different for you this week. I recently was a guest on the Defenders Live show with Laura Thorson to talk about the importance of self-reliance and how to become less dependent on the systems that so many have become accustomed to taking for granted. Well, the conversation took a few turns along the way, as I'm sure you've come to know that I'm prone to do from time to time. I really enjoyed the show, and this week I would love to share this interview with you and hear from you on the topic of building self-reliance in your life. Now, you can do that over on our blog at warriorlife.com, and I'll also put the video of my chat with Laura in this week's podcast post so that you can leave a comment over on their YouTube channel as well. And I highly advise that you go there, subscribe to their show. Laura's got a great show over there, great guests, and a lot of great topics. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for you, and now let's talk tactics.
Tactical firearms training, urban survival, close quarters combat. Welcome to the show that helps you better prepare for any threat you may face in your role as a protector and a patriot. This is the Warrior Life Podcast.
So let's just start at the beginning here. You started your company, Warrior Life, and you say that Warrior Life focuses on using a structured framework to continuously improve self-development, to be self-made, self-reliant, and self-protected. So we'll get into a little bit of a timeline on that here in just a minute. But my first question to you, I know it's a simple question, and I want to hear from the audience on this too, but what to you is a warrior? And what does that lifestyle entail? I think it's important.
Yeah, it's pretty... It is. I mean, it's fun. I mean, gosh, how many different definitions of, you know, warrior are out there? Like, we needed another one, right?
But I have
the definition cornered on warrior, but I had to go through an evolution of our current business. Cause we've gone through we had a magazine for a while and we were Modern Combat and Survival, and my interests started off in just in martial arts when I was younger, and then combatives, and I was never really into firearms, and then got in the military, got more into firearms. And when we first started our business, it was really focused mostly on martial arts. And then it was more into firearms, but then what people wanted was survival. And it's like, I was more into like wilderness survival when I was younger, but the more I started looking online to try and please our followers, everything I was finding, but that doesn't even make any sense. Like, that's not how things really work. And so the more I looked into survival practices, it was really just based on theory. It didn't seem like a lot that I was finding out there was really based on what I had seen with my own eyes, both in natural disaster and dealing with natural disasters here domestically. But then also my combat experience was in urban environments, and it was basically a collapsed city. And the things that I saw there, I didn't realize the application it would have later on in my life. It was the experience I was mm-hmm. going through. But as I started mm-hmm. seeing all the different survival information out there, I'm like, that doesn't work, and that's not going to work, and they're not even taking into account this over here. And so I just started putting out the information that I'd collected from my experiences, and it made people think. So I've kind of made it a point to really kind of challenge everything. But my point with how we got to like what's a warrior is really more about business-wise, this probably wasn't the best choice for me. Like, we started off in self-defense, and then we did firearms, and then we had survival. And with those different members of our audience, like the self-defense people, a lot of them don't even really care about firearms. And like, survival is like, they watch The Walking Dead, but that's it. The firearms people are, you know, like, some of them don't think that they don't need self-defense at all. They don't need any hand-to-hand trans. I've got my gun, right?
Yeah.
They're a little bit more inclined toward survival practices because of a conservative mindset. And there's just a little bit more crossover there. Mm-hmm. The survivalists out there, the preppers that are out there, they're always into guns, and they're typically into hand-to-hand combat also. And so, mm-hmm. but it was hard to really kind of like please everybody all at the same time. And then we had to go through a rebranding about 2 or 3 years ago for some off reasons. And when that happened, it was like, you know, business wise, I should really just focus in with what I know where we stand out. Mm-hmm. And when I started looking at that, it's like, but all of these things are important. And when I really started thinking about it and how I live my life and just how everything that we put out there, whether it was survival, whether it was firearms, whether it was combatives, everything we were putting out was, well, these are all the things that you kind of need to be able to do mm-hmm. in order to be like a warrior, right? Like, cause you're your family's warrior. And everything that I saw about warrior online was all about, you know, you had to be a Navy SEAL with a bunker in the mountains of Montana and a four-wheel drive monster truck to get you up there. And
you had to say Montana, didn't you, Jeff? You know that's where I am, right?
You're in a bunker right now. I know.
I am in a bunker, yeah.
We can see your monster truck right through mm-hmm. the window out there. Yeah. No, it's, you know, it was like, but then the other side of it, though, was people that, you know, that love the concept of being a warrior, they call themselves a warrior because they have the bumper sticker and they've got the t-shirt, mm-hmm. but they're not paying attention to the things that, like in the military, as you know, warriors, it was our daily existence, right? We were always doing something. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really easy to just check the box, buy the t-shirt, slap the bumper sticker on the four-wheel drive mm-hmm. and say, I'm a warrior, because you claim the title. But that's not going to do your family any good when your health is bad or you're overweight or and the house is burning and you're not even in good enough physical condition to be able to drag your spouse out of a burning bedroom, right? So mm-hmm. I've seen all these experiences where people you're that's the moment. It's like, here's your calling, the threat's right there, mm-hmm. and not prepared for it. Yeah. And it ends up when people are people want to be prepared for it, but it's really easy especially when you don't really, I guess like deep down on a cellular level, believe that this stuff can ever happen to you. It's mm-hmm. really easy to just own the gun, go to the range, blast some stuff off. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. I'm a warrior. And then all of a sudden when something happens, you freeze because you mm-hmm. haven't experienced that before. Or you're not really prepared. Like that's your test. And what we tell mm-hmm. people is that, you are like anybody can be a warrior. I don't care if it is an 80-year-old grandmother at home. Like, you are where you are right now. But if you really want to call yourself a warrior and live that lifestyle, it's not as hard as you think, but it does require you to get off your ass, like do something. And so we have, you know, our system is really designed to take people from zero or wherever they're at now. Cause we're not saying mm-hmm. there's like, well, you have to reach this level and then mm-hmm. you can like, no, you can call yourself a warrior right now, because here are the hallmarks of a warrior. You're self-made, self-reliant, and self-protected. You have to realize first, mindset wise, you're it. Like, it's mm-hmm. your eyes, your family is going to be looking into in the dark parking lot or stuck in the elevator or the building's burning or there's an active shooter. Like, it's your time. It's go time. And you're either warrior ready or you're not. And mm-hmm. to get there, it doesn't have to be you go away to some hoorah weekend, you know, fun class and have fun and feel like you got a bunch out of it. In fact, we use advanced learning principles and brain-based technology. And so we call it neurotactical programming. So it's how do you systematically become warrior ready for the moment where you're going to be called upon to be that protector or to be the person that is going to be self-reliant, and your family is going to be able to live through a grid down blackout, whatever the situation is, right? Like, you got to be ready for it. In the military, we'd never know what the next mission is going to be. It could be a defensive mission. Mm-hmm. It could be an offensive mission. You could be walking to your objective and you walk into an ambush. Like, we have to prepare for all of these different things. Basic trainings are, and really what I've found is that the military training that I went through had so much more application than I ever realized when we got into the survival space and how we trained in the military, how training was structured in the military. Mm-hmm. And And we use a lot of those same principles to be able to help people continuously level up, right? And so I think the best analogy for how I just kind of framed the beginning of it and how we open up being a warrior to everybody that's willing to do the things that a warrior does is basic training. Because, I mean, in basic training, the drill sergeants get this motley crew of knuckleheads that get off the bus who have come from all walks of life, right? We have some that are overweight, some that, you know, look like they're 20 pounds soaking wet. You've got guys who are hoodlums. Basically, when I went in, it was like, it wasn't for me, but I'm just saying, like, in court, it was like, you know, go to jail or join the army. Now you can't even get people in the military anymore. But it's like you have all these people that come together. And for the same reason, like your military property now, and our goal is to make you warrior ready for when that call comes. We're sticking you on a C-130. We're getting you, like, you're in combat right off, right out of the bat. So they have a very short window of time to turn you from mommy's little boy who is always getting in trouble, you know, and turn you into a warrior that's ready to go out there and face the enemy. And
let's dive into some of those examples. Sure. Could I ask you about what are some examples that you say run counter to your own personal experience about survival principles? I'm curious about that.
That run counter to, say that again.
So you said there are some survival principles that run counter to your own personal experiences that cause you to.
Oh, you mean like that I see out there?
Yeah, that aren't exactly accurate or helpful.
Yeah, sure. A lot of it comes down to people don't understand how fragile our infrastructure really is. I think, you know, one of the things I get across to people is that, you know, we go to the grocery store and there's groceries there. We go to the gas station, there's gas there. All of that is on a resupply line. Right. Anybody that's in a business where you have goods, it's the same thing. There's supply and demand. Right. And so when there can be supply there, but then all of a sudden something can happen, a triggering event of some kind can happen, which suddenly now the demand is spiked up. Right. We saw it with toilet paper during, like, you know, COVID. Right. So all of a sudden everybody flocks. Now there's no more resources. And in the same thing happened where I was in combat, like, combat shut down an entire city. And so resupply wasn't happening. What we saw was that in just a matter of 3 days, because most cities operate on like a three day resupply chain. So every 3 days, fuel's coming in. Every 3 days, groceries coming in. So it's not the same day for everybody, but it's about 3 days for goods that get turned over because there are basic resources for living, right? So when infrastructure goes down, you might not have sanitation. That was a big thing that I saw in combat that I think people don't realize that when sanitation goes down, and I use that as an example because it's something that, you know, we use the bathroom every day, but nobody ever thinks about when it's like just no longer going to be available. And I know what people do. They just continue to go. As disgusting as it is, they don't stop because people just don't. It's interesting. Like you wouldn't necessarily think about that, but that's exactly what happens. And so I've been in toxic environments, and it just to see mostly what happens to people. I'm talking about like your friends, your family, your neighbors, people that you wouldn't expect to be a threat at all. People start getting very cranky when they're hungry. And when their families are starving, you know, when there's no food and you're asking other people and they're like, no, sorry, like I've got to provide for my own family too. And that works for a little while, but then once you're desperate enough, people will do desperate things. And so I think for people to really, I mean, there's all sorts of directions that can go in, but I was seeing a lot of things being put out there about, you know, most everybody will just put up the looters will be shot sign, things like that. Like they see what they see and then they think that's what you do. And so people put together, they're drinking beer, they've got all their guns out in front of their house. They got a looters will be shot sign. All these things that even militarily, like I get, I'm going to start off just getting myself in trouble right now.
Go right ahead.
Like the warrior class out there, right? The tactical warrior class out there love, and I'm going to piss off a bunch of people that are listening right now, but like, okay. They love camouflage. They love camouflage. And so the camouflage bug out bags, the camouflage this, I got my AR-15, and it's like the concept of camouflage is to blend in. And so enough people have seen enough episodes of Doomsday Preppers and Walking Dead, everything else, to know that somebody that looks like one of those people from television, you pretty much can guarantee that they've got extra food somewhere, or they probably have ammunition. And so it's, you know, if you've got a show of force, it's one thing. If you've got like a whole battalion of Navy SEALs it's not a battalion of Navy SEALs, but I'm going to catch hell for that one too. I'm going to get all the nasty mail for that one. But it's like, you know what I mean? Like it's, if you're truly that organized, which is an elite level of organization, trust me, then fine. Like slap on all the cool gear, you know, break out the t-shirts, you know, put on your Punisher, helmet, whatever. But that's not going to do you any good when it's you and a small team, or even most people is just them. Like they know they should have a team of people that, you know, mutual aid group or something, or survival team, but.
Well, and they're broadcasting.
Most people aren't really doing it. Yeah. And that's it. So you're standing out as somebody who's prepared and it gives you, you want to thump your chest out there, but really what you're doing is you're making yourself a target. And so it's not really camouflage, you know? So we tell people, you want to be tactical, but you don't want to look tactical, and that's being tactical. So that's probably the biggest contrast that I see out there, is that it's everybody wants to be a doomsday prepper, you know, badass. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
quote. It's like we have this joke in the horse industry that everybody wants to be a cowboy until it's time to do cowboy stuff.
For me, like just getting on a horse, I know I always want to do like a cattle drive.
Yeah.
But like 10 minutes on a horse, my ass is killing me so bad. Like, how does anybody sit on this stupid thing for so long? And it's like, it starts trotting, and it's like, they're like, put your feet forward. I'm like, they're up near his ears. I'm getting flopped up and down like a paddle ball here.
Oh, you need some lessons.
I don't get the horse thing.
You need some
lessons. Need lessons.
But it's the same concept. It's the same concept about, doing the cool stuff, having all the gear, right? So let's get into that, because we want to talk about some common sense baseline things that we can keep in mind for being prepared. And I want you guys in the audience to participate too. What are some common sense preparedness things that you do or that you think people might consider? And let's talk about too, Jeff, what do you think where is the best place to start? My opinion, the best place to start is between your ears. And we say that with self-defense as well. So I think that if you have not prepared your mind, your body cannot follow. So that's one thing that we talk about a lot. Do you agree with that? I don't think the gear comes first. And a lot of people start with the stuff. They start with the gear. I was on a show, I think it's airing tonight. I was on a show on the Prepperines channel, if you guys want to watch that. Where I had the analogy of people buying guns and thinking they're safe, right? They buy the gun, they think they're safe, even though they're not trained and prepared to run the gun, okay? It's the same analogy, in my opinion, as if you knew, okay, here's the scenario. Let's say that you'd never driven a car in your life. Never. You might have intellectually kind of know how to do it, but you've never actually driven a car. And the scenario is that you bought the car and you parked it in your garage because you knew if stuff hit the fan, you'd have to drive that car 100 miles north. Okay, let's say. But you've never been in a car. You've never actually been in a car and learned how to run it. You have no subconscious competence whatsoever of how to drive a car. And we all, many of us who drive cars, we have a level of subconscious competence where we don't have to think about when to slow down or when to push the gas pedal or when to push the brake. And that same concept, I think that analogy applies to preparedness and to gun training as well. buying the gear and having the stuff is not enough, and it won't save you. Your training in it might. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. All right. So there's a lot to unpack there. All right. So one on starting with the brain, like where to start, right? So yeah, I am taking notes. So where to start? So two things. One, I think will help people help people relax a little bit, which is you start with where you are. You start with where you are. And that's what I tell people is that, like, I get it. Like, I talk about how you've got to take care of your body, right? And if you're overweight, like that's going to hurt a little bit, but I'm not saying you have to have a six pack abs or anything like that, but you are where you are right now, no matter where it is. So if you have diabetes right now, you have diabetes. Like, you have what you have. You can't wish for that you hadn't done something different, or that you're starting from a different spot. So one, relax. You already have stuff, like the basics of right now for survival. You have a shelter, you have food, you have water, you have those, you have enough right now to be able to start putting stuff together. So I just want people to understand that there is no bar to get over to get started. Our calling for people really is just, you've got to just do things step by step. And so that gets into the next step. You were talking about where starting was the brain. So with us, we've got what we call the S3 warrior machine. So it's strength, skills, and strategy. And that bottom layer of strength is where we start our machine. So it's like the path to becoming what we call warrior ready. So the very bottom rung is brain, body, and backbone. So we start with the brain. We start with being aware of the reality of different things. Like if you don't believe anything's ever going to happen, then you know you're never going to really do anything. Why would you? You don't really have to. So understanding where true threats are, where you know, taking an assessment of where you're at with different things, but the brain is where we start. In fact, all of our the next layer that we have is skills, and that's where we start getting into the skills you need to be. It's like the 80-20 rule, right? So it's not like these massive courses. We give people this like shortcut. It's less than 30 minutes. These classes all are on very specific topics relate. And they, again, start off from the very bottom, which is mindset. So even the process that they go through for skill development, which we break it down into, you know, firearms, self-defense, and survival practices. And so most of those are a lot of re-education. It's a lot of trying to empty the glass for people to understand things that they've probably come to believe over a period of time that really aren't useful to them. And it's not just beginners. Like I've talked with experts. And look, our whole thing with Warlight, Mike, my path is to continue to learn. Like there's people out listening right now that are way better shooters than I am, way better that you know, like you've got something that you're doing way better than I am. And so my goal, all I care about is just taking care of my family. So whoever I can learn from, I want to learn from them. And the same thing, you know, for me, it's like I've had some things that have gone out there. I've caught a lot of hell for, but nobody's been able to prove me wrong on some of these things, but they're a re-education process. And so that's where we felt like we really needed to get down to emptying the glass for people, building them back up. And that's where our following has really come from, is people really rethinking what they thought was a truism and then really thinking about it. And it's like, oh, you know what? That makes total sense. That's out the door. Mm-hmm. So, but brain, body, and backbone is where we start. I don't care if you're 400 pounds right now and you're overweight, whatever. It doesn't matter where you are when you're listening to this right now. It matters what you're going to do when you're done listening to this, what you're going to do tomorrow. And I don't care if it's walking around the living room and you get winded and you got to get back down on the couch. Do one lap around the living room today, try and do a lap and a half tomorrow, two lap, whatever it is. It's just continuously make gradual progress and you'll get there. You know, it's so it doesn't have to be. And the other thing is we make it fun. You know, if it's not fun, nobody's going to do it. And so we find ways, we build what we call neurotactical programming, is these advanced learning principles that we build into our training so that people will have it in long-term memory. It becomes a skill that you own rather than just something that you learned or a YouTube video you watched. And then The final thing to say about what you were talking about was the gear thing, because you're absolutely right. Everybody loves to just buy the gear. I've got the bug out bag. I've got the this, I've got the that. And so, but even that's where I tied in with like the military. Before we started any mission, it didn't matter what it was. We always started with an operations order. Now this has been developed over, you know, like eons in military time of just fine tuning. Like what are all of the different factors that you need to know about the mission going into it? And so that's planned at a very high level. Like this is, you know, on the map, this is what we have to take this objective. How are we going to do it? We have intel, we have recon. So we have a good idea what the enemy's capabilities are, how many there are there, what's meeting us once we finally get to the objective. So everything is planned out all the way to exactly what everybody's role is in the team. And then what gear are you going to need? Like if we're taking off, if we're going to be on helicopters or if we're walking, whatever it's like, that's going to dictate what we're going to need once we finally get to, you know, just to be able to get to the objective. And then once we're there, how are we going to get out of there? How are we going to take the objective? All of those different things are all spelled out extremely detailed in these operations orders. And then they're given to the leaders. The leaders go back, you give it to the team. So it trickles down. So before you go on that mission, everybody knows their role and everybody knows exactly what gear to take. But here's the thing is that the gear that you're going to bring comes up in paragraph 4 of the operations order. And it's not the first thing. It's like, hey, what's the coolest stuff we can bring with us to take this effect, right? I don't know. I just saw this like free plus shipping gizmo I can get. And you know, it's like, but it's the whole point there is that your gear is based upon the mission. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to make sure that you're in alignment with whatever your mission is. And most people just haven't even thought about what their mission is. Because your mission drives your plan, it drives your training, it drives your gear, it drives everything. But most people have not really thought out their mission. And probably one of the best examples, like the most common example I get from people, because the survival market, the conservative, area, because that's really kind of where a lot of survival or self-reliant people are kind of housed, is they're an older demographic. And so they're like, why would I ever bug out? Like, I would never leave my house. Like, I've got my house here. I've got all my stuff here. Like, why would I ever do that? Well, you most likely wouldn't unless you had to. Like, if there's a wildfire coming toward you, it's not like, oh, I guess we're staying in the house. Like, you're going to have to. I mean, I've been through a natural disaster. My town, I went through a natural disaster. And there's some horrific stories of some people that weren't prepared. Friends of mine that weren't prepared and almost died in that. And so I don't think people ever really think about what their mission really is and look at all of the, your backup plans and everything you would need if you're, I'm not going to leave the house doesn't work anymore because you have to leave the house. So, but that's going to drive a lot of things. Cause then if you decide, I guess I was wrong. I guess we do have to leave the house, but you don't have the right gear. You don't have the gasoline, now there's the highway's a parking lot, for like 50 miles. And so you have to take all of that stuff into account early on and rethink, I think, your mission. And that's what drives everything.
So if you were to look at preparedness, like in the beginning, I said that self-defense, firearms training, blah, 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 that's a small sliver of a big pie. If you were to have a big pie, what are all the pieces of that pie from a preparedness standpoint? I assume shelter, water, food. And in what order does that go in?
Yeah, I again, it's starting where you're at. So, I mean, the basics of it, when we're talking about like survival, right? Like, well, we know what we need to survive. And it's really not that it's not a vast thing. You need shelter from the elements. I mean, arguably you need shelter because you could be out in the open, but if you're exposed to the elements, trust me, being wet and cold, you're going to make poor decisions. You can die of hypothermia. There's lots of people that go hiking down a trail, get stuck there overnight and die overnight because they didn't realize that the temperature goes down. So you need, so shelter is one thing, and that could just mean an emergency bag that can act as shelter. We need shelter, food, water, security. Those to me are, I mean, and I add security in there because that's not, you know, we didn't learn that in school, but we learned about shelter, food and water, but security, because of what I've seen happens to everyday folks when there are no resources, when it's a battle for just literally for survival. And so I take security very, very, I mean, that's woven into absolutely everything that we do. On top of that, you have to look at, well, what are you normally dependent upon right now? So if you have prescription medicines that you have to take for a chronic illness, and if an infrastructure goes down, no doctors, you know, hospitals might be overrun if they're even operating. We know things are going to get looted. I mean, we've seen all these things happen. This isn't like tinfoil hat stuff. And so you being able to get those medicines is potentially going to be impossible. So how do you plan for that? So medical stuff is a big part of it. Especially doesn't matter what it is. If it's a natural disaster, there's going to be toxins in the environment. There's going to be metal shards. There's going to be like refuse around, right? So a little cut can get infected. You might not be able to get first responders to come to you. You might not have a doctor available or hospitals and things like that. So medical is part of that as well. I would say more like, you know, true first aid, like trauma care is going to be the most critical part of that. And, you know, but you'll see people, like you said, like buy all the gear. They got the nasal pharyngeal stuff to shove down everybody's nose. They don't know how to use it or anything, but you know, hey, I've got that stuff.
They might run into somebody that knows how to use it.
Yeah. But they watch a YouTube video. So yeah, they'll be able to get it. But you know, you're right. It's a lot of stuff, but again, it's driven by what is it that you deal with in your own area. Mm-hmm. I just moved to Florida about 3 years ago. Where I was before that, I was in a very rural area, small town, well positioned, fortified. Like my house was, I had everything all set up. And then I moved to Florida, like the worst state I could possibly move to if I ever needed to bug out. I got one way up. I can't even go in like all directions here. Worst place. But I met my high school. I reconnected with my high school sweetheart, and all right, fine. I'll go to Florida.
Love that story.
So it's, you know, it's just you have to really take a look at what your practical threats are, not tinfoil hat threats. What are the practical threats, and then what resources do you have? Well, that you already have. Like, start where you're at. What, you know, take stock of what food you have. I had a friend that was in. He was in New York City when I forget the name of the hurricane that came through. This was about, I want to say, 8 years ago or so. It was like Irma. Somebody out there will probably say something, but like Irma or something came through. I'm sure I screwed that up. But he was in New York. This is when New York City really got hit, right? And then like it shut down infrastructure, and then the trash was piling up out there. People were going through dumpsters trying to find food. Mm-hmm. He was just visiting New York City and couldn't get a flight out. And so he went to the grocery store and it was bare. And so he figured he found a great solution, which I learned from him. It's like he found out that the ethnic stores, like he went to an Asian store packed with food, Nobody ever thought about that. They're all going to, you know, HEB, the Piggly Wiggly, the Publix, whatever. They're going where you go.
Yeah.
And so he got all this food, brought it back to his hotel room. His buddies all came over. They're like, oh, we're going to wait out the hurricane and everything. They're all there. And then they start eating all of his. They're not eating like the stuff that's going to spoil in the next couple of days. They're eating all the stuff that would last a few weeks. And so he's like, what are you guys doing? But people aren't thinking about those things. Yeah. Right. So I think like I said, there's a lot of stuff to cover, but it really has to be personalized to you. It's not a one size fits all thing. Mm-hmm. And you really can take stock in what you have right now, just going through your pantry, your freezer, knowing if all the electric went down, because grid down blackout right now is, I think, the biggest thing that everybody's like super worried about, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And that would be devastating, like literally just change the life as we know it, like for who knows how long. So without electricity and you've got just the food that you have right now, which are you going to eat first? How are you going to manage what you have as resources? So you can start right there. You don't have to buy anything or anything like that. But that's the best place to start is where you're at and just take an inventory and then start running through what if scenarios based upon threats that you know you might have in your area, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's a good segue. So I watched one of your videos, well, a few of them, but one of them struck me. And it was the video about developing a combat mindset for survival. And there were quite a few good points on here. And I'm definitely condensing this. The video was long, not long, but it was detailed and he went in depth in each point. But I'm just going to share a few of those highlights. And then my question to you after this is, which of these that I'm going to talk about here do you think people commonly get wrong? So the highlights of this video, and I don't know if combat mindset, but it's speaking to mindset. The first thing is understanding that good people can do bad things. Secondly, to understand you might have to do bad things to survive and you need to know where your line in the sand is. Third, walk softly and carry a very big stick. I love that one. And the best weapon you can have is avoidance, which I love because we talk about that too. Your best weapon is avoidance. The next one is be prepared to change course. Don't always follow authority. Follow your gut. That was a good one too. And he fleshed that one out really well. I encourage you to go watch that video on Warrior Life. Another one is to take a firearms course. There's no substitute for actual experience under stress, which we fully believe in. And he talks about competitive shooting and paintball and hunting and all those things. And then another one is that the rule of law is going to find some way to come back around. And I fully believe that. I think that if there's lawlessness, whether it is order coming back and law coming back, you know, that will follow you where you go. But I also believe in accountability, judgment, if you will, to a higher power. And so I think whatever choices you do make, you have to be prepared to live with. So I loved that video that you did. And which one of those do you think people commonly get wrong? Was it the, I'll just let you speak to it.
Which one do you think people get wrong? Which of those resonated with you that you think, people don't really...
I think that the good people can do bad things. I think people don't understand that if it gets really bad, that how bad it really could get. And we don't want to think about that, right? I mean, that's part of the reason why a lot of people don't get into self-defense or get into training until something happens to them, right? Mm-hmm. I fall into that category. So I have a whole story about that. So I do think that's true. We don't want to think bad things could happen or that people could be bad. It's just easier not to think about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I had to take notes on that because I totally forgot what the seven things were, but you know, I'm in my 50s and you're obviously 23. I'm going to say, memory's going on me, but no, I would say of all of those things. And there was a reason why it was combat mindset versus, like survival mindset and things like that. It was really more about things that I've come to learn. And so I would say that the thing I think that people get wrong, and I'll bring this out as I think most people get this wrong because it applies to, firearms as well. And that's, people don't understand that rule of law will come back around. I think in general, people don't understand the law. I think I've seen even the most experienced shooters out there who don't understand their responsibility. I mean, they'll talk all the time about the Second Amendment, right? Like, you know, we got to protect the Second Amendment, but they don't realize that the easiest way for you to lose your Second Amendment rights is be a dumbass with your gun. And they don't they really don't, a lot of people just don't even really understand the basic concepts of when they can even show their weapon, mm-hmm. that they're not going to get in trouble. Because if, I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter necessarily if you're innocent. Like, you can go to court, and if you take a plea deal, it's still a felony conviction. It can still be a felony conviction. So I think that most people don't understand that. Like, we have a video test that people can take. And as they go through it, it's draw, don't draw, shoot, don't shoot. And the situations aren't super tricky. They're things that you could absolutely find yourself in. And mm-hmm. I think that I forgot that we changed the numbers a little bit here and there, but it stays pretty steady at about 70% of people can't pass that. Mm-hmm. And we have three, you can either go home, go to jail, or go to the morgue. Like, decisions that you make can either get you killed or not make can get you killed. Right. But not understanding those concepts. And so a lot of people, we see freeze. Like, we can mm-hmm. see how long they're on the screen, everything. They'll freeze because they don't really know what to do. They got to think about it. Well, when somebody's coming at you in a parking lot, you don't have time to really like stop and think about that stuff. Mm-hmm. But even I was watching Andrew Branca. I don't know if you ever had him on the show, but Andrew is an attorney. He has his whole thing is about, like, how do you protect yourself as a gun owner and making the right choices legally. And the other day he jumped into an impromptu broadcast about, I guess somebody had forwarded him, I guess Trump said something about looters should be shot or something like that. Like, if he's president, I don't want to mess up all the quote, but it was something about, like, looters, it was okay to shoot looters in some way. And mm-hmm. and so I was watching it, and I knew where he was going to go with it. It was like, no, if somebody's stealing something, you can't just shoot them. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter who said it. You can't do that. You're going to be. But when I was looking at the comments in the live stream, everybody was like, yeah, it's like, well, he just won my vote again. It's just a bunch of stuff in there about, like, what you're doing is you're putting your label on your beliefs on there. And so all the comments that you make online, those things are going to live on. And so if you ever do find yourself in a situation where you had to use your firearm, or even if it was unarmed and you had to do harm to another person, and you're called into question for that, if it's a survival scenario and you legitimately had, like, somebody was busting into your house and legitimately you thought you were going to be attacked, and you legitimately shoot them, and you're 100% justified in doing it, but then you had this big giant piece of plywood out on your front lawn saying looters will be shot, survivors will be shot again. Yeah. And that was a sign that was out. I have some videos on YouTube. I had a neighbor of mine that had that sign up on his driveway. It was like, trespassers will be shot, survivors will be shot again. It's like, okay, so try and convince the jury it was just a joke when, now, why did you have to put 17 rounds into this person? He kept fighting back. It's like, well, are you sure? Because it seems like maybe he was just alive and he wasn't dead yet. So mm-hmm. you've got to be very cautious. Like, I tell you, take down those signs. We don't dial 911. Like, mm-hmm. no, of course you dial 911. Get rid of all that crap. Mm-hmm. Because it's not going to play right. If a prosecutor decides that they're going to take the case and they feel like they've got something on you and they want to make an example out of you, like, they're going to parade the stuff that you've put online, signs that you had. Oh no, but I was just joking about that stuff. Oh no, my brother-in-law bought me that t-shirt or that bumper sticker. And so, I think it's the law part of it that, whether it's survival, whether it's firearms, or even if it's unarmed self-defense, I think people don't really understand the implications of their actions.
Totally agree with you. Such good information. So, hey guys, we're almost at the end of the hour already. So mm-hmm. if you have questions for Jeff, please put those in the comments. He's not going to be here much longer. He is on what, Eastern time? So
yeah,
it's past his bedtime.
Past my bedtime.
Yeah.
It is past my bedtime, Laura. Thanks. I know it was a joke, but it's past my bedtime.
Yeah, it's almost past mine too, Jeff. It's okay. So yeah. If you guys have questions for Jeff, please put those in the comments. We'll get to those here in just a second. So let's leave the audience, Jeff, with some more information about you. I want you to talk about, and you have the shirt on, I see, the nonprofit Operation Save Our Soldiers. Could you speak to that for just a little bit and then also let people know where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just been up when I was on a personal mission just for helping my brothers. I'd had a bunch of, I was out of the military in 10 years, but I had a lot of my friends that I'd gone into the military with. Like, we were in a cohort unit in 10th Mountain Division. So we went to basic together and we were together for like 3 years after that. And so a lot of my friends stayed in, made it a career, and we're having a lot, like, we're losing soldiers to suicide. And finally one of my buddies called me and he said, dude, we found, like, this is a freaking cure. And got me onto the board for an organization where this woman was doing some amazing work with veterans, where it was just like that. It was just erasing the symptoms. And so I was part of that organization for a while, but there were some limitations to her organization, and it really wasn't taking off. It really only came down to her skills. We could only do like so many people. But then there was a better version of what she was doing that I discovered when I separated from that organization. And it was really just getting off the ground when it came to veterans. It was trauma-based therapy originally for sexual assault victims, but they found it worked just as well for veterans as well. And so I connected with another combat veteran. She was just bringing that protocol out into helping more veterans out there, was building out retreats. I was trying to build retreats to cover the same protocol that I had found helpful before. But I suck at organizing anything. She's great at organizing everything. She couldn't raise money, but so my nonprofit, we raise money and sponsor veterans to come to the retreat to get it's a brain-based healing protocol that we use. And we are literally taking veterans who have been in the VA system and curing, I'll say the word curing, we're curing those symptoms of PTSD in as little as 1 hour. Done.
Whoa.
Permanently. We have brain scans to prove it now. We've been really getting the proof to show it. Now the military is finally like starting to take more notice of it. There's no drugs involved. There's no reliving the pain of past experiences. And it's really just, I'll simplify it for people just because PTSD, and I put a dash in between D, because it's not a disorder. You don't have a disorder. It's not a disease. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it mechanically, if you look at the brain mechanically, it's in disorder. And so what I mean by that is our brains have a recycle bin and a trash bin. Trauma is stored in the recycle bin because it's meant to keep you alive. It's a gift. Post-traumatic stress is a gift because if your convoy gets hit by an IED, it's meant to allow you to recognize symptoms very fast, and then your body takes over. It's not a conscious thing. It's all subconscious. And so it's in this recycle bin in your brain, so that if it doesn't even matter if consciously you understand. That's why a lot of veterans don't, you know, can't listen to fireworks or go to 4th of July. Of course, you know, it's fireworks. It's not gunfire, but your subconscious doesn't know that. It's still registering that it's gunfire. And so it brings back the hormonal response, the anxiety, whatever it is that you got locked into your recycle bin. It's there for a reason, and it comes back and it comes back and it comes back. And so the traditional method that the VA has used forever and a lot of therapists use is talk therapy. Like, we have to talk about it until you become so desensitized to it that it just doesn't even, like, you've talked your way through it already. And that doesn't work. You're trying to consciously approach something that subconsciously got you anchored in. And so what you have to do is you have to work with the subconscious mind. The subconscious is where it's rooted. And all we're doing with this protocol is it's a number of different tools that we have that are brain-based protocols that they're very kind of funny to do sometimes. But what it's doing is it's taking that memory that you have, that memory, and it's putting it in the trash bin. You still have the memory. You're not getting you know, you're not getting brainwashed or anything, but it's just, you can see the moment that it happens. And it happened to me. I thought I had my shit buried like deep, deep down. Like I didn't have any problems whatsoever. And then when I came to the first retreat, all of a sudden I started having panic attacks, and I'd never had panic attacks before in my life. And, I didn't know why until Kendra, the woman that I, did the, she's the other combat veteran. And, she said, "You're getting triggered." And I'm like, "I have no idea what you're even like, this can't be." And so I went and had, in 1 hour, like all of a sudden it's just like, wait a minute, what just happened? And I love seeing, like, we get 10 to 12 veterans in every retreat. Every 100% of the donations that come into to our nonprofit goes to sponsoring the veteran. I personally take care of all of our administrative expenses, so that when people donate, it's not like 80% goes to there, but 20% goes to admin. No, 100% goes to sponsoring a veteran. They leave a different person. You're going to make me start crying. I'm going to start
has
like
this been literally like 100% effective, Jeff.
It's 91% effective. We've only had one person I know of that came that I know it didn't work on, and I know why. Sometimes people get anchored into their identity as a veteran with PTSD, and it's hard to let go of that. Like they don't really have, like it hasn't become such an overriding urge that they want to escape it because it's part of their identity of who they are. But we've had a guy, one of the sessions that we do is on pain management and pain. We had a guy that was, when he was leaving the retreat for 5 years, he wasn't able to move this finger. Like it didn't bend. So he was leaving the retreat and he was going for surgery on whatever, the tendons or whatever, to allow him to bend his finger again. There was a 1 hour session that we did. It's a certain kind of a meditation that revolves around pain. We got out of that and he's like, I won't use the F word here, but it's like, I bend my effing finger. And it was just what the mind can do is mind blowing it can do. I mean, it can have that kind of control. And so whether that was his trigger, like I never really looked at like deeply, was it his trigger finger or anything like that? But, but the power of the mind is there to protect you, and trauma and where it's stored and PTS is there to keep you alive. It's a gift. Love it. But it doesn't have a purpose in your everyday life with your family, with your friends, with your coworkers. And it doesn't have to. I love it when we see, like, you can see the moment. And we've got guys that have been on medications. They're on all the pills. They've been through decades inside the VA. We even take, we've had Vietnam veterans come through. We brought them in too. And they're just like bawling at the end of the thing, because it's like they've never experienced that kind of relief before, but you can see it happen in their brain where it's just like something just happened. Like what just happened? All of a sudden you ask them, okay, go ahead and think back to something we haven't even talked about that's been traumatic for you. And they're like, there's no trigger. Like, and they just start laughing, and it's like, they can't believe it. And they're just, when we get everybody together after they've had their individual like healing visits, it's just, they just can't believe it. It's just, it really is amazing. It's just, it's so rewarding. Yeah.
Wow. So can people go somewhere to learn about that, Jeff?
Yeah. So Operation Save Our Soldiers is my nonprofit. And so you can go to operationsaveoursoldiers.org. There is a place you can donate there. And again, 100% of it goes to sponsoring a veteran to get the help that they need. And then, I mean, we've got a backlog of veterans. The word's really gotten around because people are going out there and they're calling their battle buddies who everybody just thinks that, people come in like this. Our hardest thing is getting past this. Like, I've been through the VA, I've done all this stuff, it's not going to work, blah, blah, blah. That's the hardest part, because it does work. And then all of a sudden they're calling all their buddies like, dude, I know about the VA. I know. It's different, man. Like, this worked. You've got to get out here. Then we get the calls from the spouses. We get you gave my daughter her father back. You gave my husband back. We have women's retreats from female veterans. And it's just, it's amazing. I could go on and on about it, but it's truly revolutionary it's like a real re-education about what, therapy. We don't even call it therapy because it's different. Yeah. It's not therapy. We don't call it therapy because we don't want it to be like everything else. It's different for a reason because nothing else was really working.
Right. I wonder if first responders could benefit from that as well, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's really, really
And it can
powerful.
Be done long distance. It can be done over Zoom too. Like it can.
What? So are you serious?
If anybody, I'm dead serious. So you can, so if anybody does, like if you know somebody, and one thing is we don't let, like family members can't like get their family member in, like, oh, my son or my brother, he really needs it. Like people have to come on their own, but we do a call ahead of time to be able to talk about, not talk about like their trauma or anything, but really to just to make sure that they're in the right mindset, that they really want to heal, that they're in a good space for it. We might work out some things before they even come to the retreat. Like you have to come there clear-minded, like no alcohol, no drugs. Like you got to come clean because we're working with the brain here. And all of those things affect how your brain operates. And so if we're going to literally rewire the brain, literally we're rewiring the brain, it needs to be clear. And so there might be some things we have to do before people get out there, but we make sure that they're coming in ready to go. And it's just amazing.
Wow. I have never heard of anything like that ever before.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And you said you
went through it yourself. But if somebody is out there, I went through it myself and I didn't know what the protocol was. I knew what it did and that was all I cared about. Like, I don't care. Just get the healing out there. I'll bring more people in. We'll raise more money. We'll do all that thing to just get it to them. And then I was getting triggered and then a fellow combat veteran was there who was also a practitioner. We went off into a room and he did a couple of exercises with me. And the thing is, like when you visualize trauma that you went through, it's the brain where it's stored in the recycle bin. It's like it's happening to you right then. That's why you're getting the hormonal response, because it's like your brain is reading, this is happening. There's gunfire. No. It's fireworks. No, it's gunfire. And all of a sudden, like your body is having the response like it's happening right now. And so when I would visualize the things that I witnessed, it was vivid. It was like I was there. It was first person, first person. Then he did a couple of these exercises with me. He's like, I want you to go back to what you were thinking about before that we were, and I want you to talk to me about it now. What does it look like now? And I was like, this is weird. Like, this is weird. And he's like, well, explain it to me. And I said, it's like everything is on like a movie screen, like out in front of me. Oh, it's not happening.
You have separation from it now.
It was like, and all the like colors were drab. It wasn't vivid like it was before. And it was like, it's like watching just on a screen. And he's like, well, how does it feel inside? I'm like, nothing. Stuff that I couldn't get through without just bawling like a baby. It just, like I could think about it, I could talk about it. And it just, now the only thing that makes me cry about it is just like seeing these veterans come through and guys saying, you know, I had a gun in my mouth like the night before I came out here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can't believe I got my life back.
Wow.
It's just, yeah. I mean, we're changing lives. We're literally saving lives out there with this.
Wow. Well, we will be sure to add that to the comments because I didn't have that in there before into the description. Awesome work, Jeff. Awesome work. Now, as far as Warrior Life is concerned, we have all of the social media and your website running at the bottom of the screen now. So if you guys want to check out what Jeff's doing, you can go to warriorlife.com. OperationSaveOurSoldiers.org is the organization that he was speaking about just now. So if you want to help out with that, please go there. And now we're over the hour and I just got so into
I got time
what
you for questions. If we can get to questions, I'm happy to go.
Yeah, we have a few here. So Kathy wants to know, in your opinion, what are the main skills you will need when society collapses besides defense skills?
Four-wheel drive monster truck, a bunker in the hills of Montana, six-pack abs. That should pretty much do it. I think you're pretty much good to go there. I think that the main skills that you'll need when like society collapses, besides defense skills, you're going to be thirsty and you're going to be hungry. And we've got a friend of mine that's in our network also, who's done a lot of work on the history of starvation, like what's happened in throughout history in regimes where sometimes people were starved on purpose, and what they go through and what people will do when they're starving. So food's going to be a big part of it. I tell people, like, water is not going to be as much of an issue. Like, it's more of a survival issue. Like, you need water more than you need food. Mm-hmm. Water is going to be easier to find. It's easier to prepare for, not by storing it, but like by being able to become your own water factory. Like, there are ways to filter water. There's things to do like that, but there's wild stuff out there. Now, there's wild food too, but, you know, plants, like, how many salads do you have to eat to get enough calories to do anything, right? And if you're going to go hunting, like, I went hunting my entire childhood, and with my stepfather, we never saw one single thing, never pulled the trigger ever. So it's not that easy, right? So I think food is going to be a big thing. I would say that being a lone wolf is not going to be a winning plan. So starting to think about, we have one of our training courses, our workshops for Warrior, our academy, where it was on the truth about survival teams, because it's kind of like one of those cool, sexy topics that preppers love. Mm-hmm. But we took people through a series of fun exercises that got them to realize that, one, you already have a team, whether you think about it or not, that's not planned, like the ones that are going to show up on your door. And then even if you have a team, it's the people that they're going to bring with them. It's like, oh, but I couldn't leave my, it's like, you have to decide now, like, who's going to get eaten by zombies and who's not, because you have to close the door here at some point. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but it's like, how do you think about those things? So I would say that if you're a lone wolf, you're going to get devoured. You're going to get devoured. And so thinking about it in terms of banding together with people that are also like-minded, that are willing to prepare, are willing to do the things that are needed, to assume that sort of an event could happen, because it can happen.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. Good. Okay. The next one is, what is your upbringing and how did that play into your passion for helping others?
Yeah, that's a good question. I grew up in a little town in upstate New York. I think I got most of, I was always just a very, there's a reason I'm saying this, but like, I was a very sensitive kid. Like, I care about other people. I was very compassionate. My mother is an extremely compassionate person. And that got really ingrained in me. And I think when I joined the military in combat, the most rewarding thing for me, and it really gave me a sense of, I guess, of really like who I was at my core, and that you can marry. In fact, I think it was one of those combat mindset things, which was, what was it? Walk softly, but carry a very big stick, right? Like, mm-hmm. You don't have to be a hard ass. You don't have to be, hard on the exterior. Like, I'm one of the easiest going people you will ever meet. And I have a lot of compassion for my fellow man. I don't get pulled into political BS. I don't get, like, I look for the person. I look for who the person really is. And so that was ingrained in me early. And in combat, having the people that the citizens in the area that we were in come out and hug us because they were so happy that we freed them in their area. Like, it just really gave me a sense for why we were doing that. Now, at the same time, I saw soldiers who were, you know, mean to people. Like, they were just cocky and overconfident about it. So not everybody has that level, but I think it is a warrior quality, mm-hmm. to care about people. And I'm not saying that, you know, when it starts raining and it doesn't stop, that, you know, just, you know, shoot anybody that gets on your front porch. I've been through natural disasters where everybody pulls together. It's not like looters are coming out of the woodworks, like in a lot of, you know, these areas. So I would say that, so my upbringing was one where I think I got very good core qualities that I like about myself as a person, and married with the ability to, you know, kill a man with my pinky in under 5 seconds, you know, it's just like, it's like being able, but for me, that's where everything has evolved for me, from my early martial arts training to now firearms training. Like, for me, I've learned more and more that I think you'll appreciate this from a firearm standpoint also, is that you've got to really train for and understand where that line is. Like I call it the switch. And it really originated first when I was looking at self-defense, because you can see like somebody who's much bigger than somebody else. Like you can see the intimidation factor. They've already been beaten, and people don't realize just how easy it is to take out a human being. They don't understand how frail and fragile the human body really is if you know how to attack it. And so but most people lose fights because they don't realize they're in a fight. Like they don't realize they're about to get hit. I've seen this in so many different videos. Same thing like with firearms. It's like if it's an unfamiliar situation, if you haven't trained for it, if you haven't even thought about it, you don't know what to do. You're still processing, right? But the criminals don't have to go through that process. That OODA loop, they're already in action.
Yeah.
Like you're always going to be coming off of, well, almost always going to be coming off of they've got the advantage, and you're going to have to fight for getting the advantage back. That's not an easy thing to do. So understanding like that switch for yourself, you can be soft. You can smile right in the face of danger. But then when you know where your switch is, you switch. It's not a playground like, well, we'll start pushing first to see who's going to punch first. It's no, like you've given every out you can. You've tried to de-escalate. You've done all these things, and you realize you are not getting out of this fight. Mm-hmm. And the first person that throws that strike is usually the one that's going to win. They certainly have the advantage. I would much rather it be me. But if I don't know where that switch is, then I'm going to either freeze or I'm going to make a mistake in what I'm doing. I'm not going to be conscious of my surroundings. My brain's going to be focused on other things. But I know where that switch is. And when I see that switch happen, you just unleash. Yeah. Same thing. Like don't draw your firearm just to show somebody your firearm. Like you got to know where your line is when you're legally justified to do it and tactically in a position where, you know, it's time to do it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the most dangerous people, I do believe, are also the kindest. You know, they're kind people, compassionate people. They have big hearts. They care about others, but they also do whatever they have to do to protect themselves and those they love. And that is, I think, the definition of a dangerous person and a good one. Let's see here. There's more questions. Are you okay with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I won't stay up, you know, to midnight or anything.
I took my Geritol today, so.
I'm not making fun, Jeff.
You don't even remember Geritol. Shut up.
I think I've seen a commercial maybe.
You've heard of it before. Yeah.
Yes, I have. Is there a way for a non-vet to get the therapy for PTS? I have a friend whose daughter was robbed at gunpoint and she is struggling.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are practitioners that do this now. We've been trying to train as many people as possible. So we're getting a lot of like, and you don't have to be a therapist to have the college degree and everything in order to learn this. Like we're just trying to get people healed. So, but there is a network of therapists around the country that are continuously getting trained, and I can connect people. So if people reach out to me at OperationSaveOurSoldiers.org, just reach out to us there, and then we'll be able to connect you with somebody.
Okay. Okay. And then when we go to that website, can we donate there as well?
Okay. Yeah. There's a donate button right at the top. Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Every little bit counts, every little bit counts.
Yeah. And then I'm not sure exactly this question. Maybe you understand it better than I do. What do you see happening in Argentina or Bosnia?
I know there's been a lot of stuff that's been just recently happening in Bosnia. I mean, I think Argentina, they might be talking. I mean, they've been in various stages of collapse for quite a while now. I think they serve as very good, like learning, like a petri dish. You know? Yeah, you can. That's what I was looking for. Case study. You know, you can really look and see what happens in other places. And Argentina has been one that I've looked at in the past from the standpoint of food, and they were robbing trucks like that were, because people, you look at the lines for like just trying to get food. It looks like they're miles long. And so people were eating dogs. They're pulling over trucks and raiding the trucks. And that was one of the things that was in the combat mission that you were talking about, was that, after 3 days without resupply, where I was initially positioned when in combat, neighbors just started fighting amongst one another. And there was a truck that was there when all the fighting started, and like nobody knew what was in the truck. And after 3 days, when there was no resupply, people started getting in there, and there was food in there. But then all of a sudden, it was like a massive like revolt. Like neighbors were taking it out on other neighbors, and they were all fighting over those things. So we tried to stop it initially. That was not going to happen. Hungry people will overpower you. And we weren't just get blown away. They're just civilians. So we ended up looting that truck and just making it a more organized loot than them fighting each other over it. We still had a position of authority there. So yeah, I was a looter. But it probably saved lives for what was happening at that time. And so, I think you can see those things in Argentina and how they've dealt with financial collapse there. I mean, we're always waiting for that time bomb to nail us on the economic side. So, I think there's good case studies there to look at.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we got through all the questions, Jeff. See, that was pretty painless, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure.
No, you were so much fun to have on. I had a feeling you would be. I've watched quite a few of your videos, and I just love how articulate you are online, how you said you're not organized, but it seems as though you are. So you're putting on a good front anyway. And just a very kind person with lots of experience to offer. So we appreciate your time tonight so, so much. Really, really had fun with you tonight. I appreciate you letting me poke fun here and there as well.
It's all good. Yep. Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it, Laura.
You've been listening to the Warrior Life Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show. You can help us spread the mission of self-reliance and self-protection when you rate us. And leave us a comment wherever you enjoy these podcasts. And don't forget to check out our posts and videos on our social media channels. You'll see a full directory when you visit our website at www.warriorlife.com. We'll see you next time. This has been the Warrior Life Podcast. Prepare, train, survive.